Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming. I really was appreciating when I came back into the Zendo, just the feeling of everyone's efforts to be steady, to take up this practice as best we can. And I was really reflecting, you know, it's not easy, actually. And, you know, at first it seems like, well, maybe it's like really, it would be a physically demanding thing to sit a particular way, or sit really still. And maybe sometimes it does seem like it's physically demanding, especially at the beginning, maybe in the middle and the end too, I don't know. But I don't know, I don't think that's really what's difficult. I think what's difficult is just actually really showing up for our own life in a sustained, steady way and being willing to feel what we're feeling. That we have so many ways that we're a little bit resistant, you know, to our life just the way it is. We want a little bit improvement, right? A little bit different. Some other version of me would be nice, you know. So this practice really calls on us to just be with ourselves just the way we are, and that's pretty hard. So thank you for that effort. And it was such a feeling of mutual support. If things are working well, then the others around us support us in doing that effort. And then I was really appreciating the chanting, because in the chanting, what I was having fun doing was listening to the different voices, picking out the different voices, and I could hear the voices of people, you know, I've been lucky enough to chant with for 20 years and more, and 10 years, and 2 years, and for the first time tonight. All are so wonderful, you know, all the different voices, and yet somehow coming together, one voice. So I was just appreciating our practice, you know, that sometimes it seems like that maybe the talks can give us some new information, you know, something outside of just the actual doing the practice, some new ideas. And especially tonight, our topic is sex. So we hope, you know, for some light, you know, on this dark and difficult, tough topic, you know. You know. But whether or not that'll happen, I don't know. But what we do know is that we are and have been in a really beautiful way, bringing forward something, you know, something important, something simple, you know, something ordinary, and something really important about what it is to be a human being, which may prove to be the most important ingredient for our sexual lives to be healthy also. And another sort of pre-announcement. If you were here, you remember that one of the interesting things about this school of Buddhism is that the precepts that we're talking about, we're having a series of talks about precepts for ethical living from the Zen tradition. And the precepts in this tradition are not just precepts. They're not just guidelines for ethical living. They also have taken on a kind of a power of support and sort of spiritual depth and growth, that studying them and agreeing to them and receiving them in some way into our heart has a sort of power in this tradition. And so we have a ceremony we do where people formally receive these precepts, and they also receive this little bib-like thing that some people are wearing called rakusu, which we think was invented in China about the 8th century, when there were terrible Buddhist repressions. It was a way for the Buddhist clergy to be, had to defrock just secretly. They'd wear that under their clothes, we think. We don't really know for sure the origins of the rakusu, but that's the best theory, that it's like a covert way of being a priest. Because originally these precepts as empowerment were only received by priests. And then another innovation of our particular line of Zen, Soto Zen, is to provide a way for them to be available to people who are not priests, who can receive these precepts. And so I just want to mention that 7 people in our community are going to start doing the hand sewing practice work of creating that garment for themselves that then they'll receive in the ceremony, which is kind of great in a way too, you know. You create it, you give it away, and you receive it again. So I live in fear that I'll forget a name, but the 7 people are Jeffrey Harker, who lives now in Sammamish but practices with us regularly. Suzanne Nguyen, who started practicing with us years ago and moved away, husband's job, had 2 kids, is a whole different person now, you know, a mid-30s mother of two instead of a 20-something exploring young woman. So that's wonderful that she'll receive the precepts here. Dave Lynch, we're here. Kevin Connor. Georgia Mitchell. Uh-oh. Two more. Oh, should have written it down. Bob Rose lives in Anacortes, but has been coming regularly. And the seventh person will come to me in a moment. Jeff McKenna.
I was trying to fool you.
Yeah. So the ceremony has a lot of elements, so we'll talk more about it another time, but one of the primary elements is it's a kind of a sense of entering a family. It's a family entering ceremony. The Japanese title for the ceremony is Zaike Tokudo. Jukai is another word that's used. Jukai means to receive the precepts. Zaike Tokudo means staying at home and receiving the way. Staying at home and receiving the way. So that's what they're going to do. We're going to start this Saturday, and it'll be a slow process, which many of them have been involved in already for many months or years. Then hopefully in October we'll have a ceremony. So I want to mention that, that these precepts have so many dimensions. Allen Ginsberg wrote a song, a poem called Song. Excuse me, he wrote a poem called Song in 1956 as a young man. And it's about our deepest problem, which seems to be this feeling of separation, right? Isolation, being alone, which itself has so many elements, fear, unworthiness, doubt. So it's a primal kind of problem. So here's a poem from Allen Ginsberg about this question of separation. The weight of the world is love. Under the burden of solitude, under the burden of dissatisfaction, the weight we carry is love. Who can deny in dreams it touches the body, in thought constructs a miracle, in imagination anguishes till born in human, looks out of the heart, turning with purity, for the burden of life is love. But we carry the weight warily, and we must rest in the arms of love at last, must rest in the arms of love. No rest without love, no sleep without dreams of love. Be mad or chill, obsessed with angels or machines. The frail wish is love, cannot be bitter, cannot deny, cannot withhold if denied. The weight is too heavy, must give for no return, as thought is given in solitude, in all the excellence of its excess. The warm bodies shine together in the darkness. The hand moves to the center of the flesh. The skin trembles in happiness, and the soul comes joyful to the eye. Yes, yes, that's what I wanted. I always wanted to return to the body where I was born. Song by Allen Ginsberg. So, one of the powers that only gods have is the power to create life. Right? So it's a very magical and mysterious power. And yet, two human beings can create life, being as gods. And so sexuality has that power, you know, has that weight. And a strong power and a strong weight can turn, right, in many different directions with incredible energy and incredible violence. and incredible love. The Buddha, when he created the monastic order, didn't want to deal with this. It's like too hard, you know, too powerful. So following, you know, and partly he was following the usual plan for serious religious practitioners of his day, the emerging groups of wandering shramana, and that's where shaman, same root as shaman, they had shramanas, were wandering religious people, mostly men probably, a little different from the Brahmanical sort of mainstream order. They were all celibate, so the Buddha had his monks and nuns, once he invited nuns to join, be celibate. And when the monastic rules were created, remembering that our 16 precepts are in a way a reinvention of these monastic rules, there are only four rules which merit expulsion from the order, permanent expulsion from the order, no return. And the very first rule is sexual intercourse. That's the first parajika rule, where you're barred for life. Although oral sex is a slightly lesser one, it says in here. But it's up there with stealing and killing somebody or condoning the death of somebody. And interestingly, the fourth parajika offense for which you were expelled from the order is lying about your mental state. Lying about your mental state, especially in the service of bragging about your spiritual attainment. But the way it's translated literally here is lying about your mental state. And boy, we do that all the time. So that's something to think about. Someone says, how are you? You're in danger, you know? You gotta be honest. And then there are 13 Sangha Dissesa precepts, which are like suspension from the order. You have to confess, you have to do like a penance, very much like other systems. You have to be repentant. And the first five of those 13 are sexual. And I won't list them all, but you can read it. I have a nice little handout. I can send it to you on PDF or put it on the website. I made a little handout of what the original rules were for the monks. 227 precepts for the monks, another 30 or 40 for the nuns. And so six of the first nine are about sex. So this is a serious thing, very powerful. And of course that great power of gods can be turned in a horrible way, too, a really horrible way. Forty-four % of victims of sexual assault are under 18. Every 2 minutes, someone in the U.S. is sexually assaulted. And 54% of those sexual assaults are never reported to the police. 97% of people who commit sexual crimes, they think, are never punished by the legal system. And then it gets even worse during wartime. Sexuality, rape used as a weapon. And this became mostly to the public eye during the Bosnian conflict. Then it got so bad that they had to include mass rape as a crime against humanity. That's when that was invented. But there's a really horrible, I'm glad that it's there, but there's a really horrible article in Wikipedia about rape in war. It's 11 pages long, and it goes way back. So I won't depress us with too many statistics, but just a few highlights for us to bear witness to this incredibly destructive power that is, of course, a perversion of sex, and yet has an element from that power to give and create life turned on its head, turned into killing life, turned into destruction. The Japanese army, when it was controlling a good section of China, created a system of brothels for the soldiers. As many as 200,000 women were pressed into service as prostitutes. And our own American army is not exempt from this shameful history. After the U.S. successfully took back the southernmost island of Japan, Okinawa, quite a bit south of the main part of Japan, but it's part of mainland Japan, U.S. soldiers raped as many as 1,300 Okinawan women during the first 10 days of the occupation. And there's equally horrible stuff about the German army when they invaded the Soviet Union, and then right back the other way at the end of the war, the Soviet Union on the side of the victors occupying what became Eastern Germany. Thousands of documented rapes, and probably many thousands more than that. And then back to Bosnia. Serbo-Croatian society is patriarchal. So your ethnicity is judged to be the ethnicity of your father. Now, if we were standing in front of a Croatian person and a Serbian person, I don't know if we'd be able to tell them apart. But they can certainly tell each other apart. And so the Serbian army created rape camps with the intent of impregnating women so that the children born would be Serbian. At least 35,000 women are documented to have been held in these rape camps and raped, probably many more. So maybe just a moment of silence for all that. Boy. And sexual energy is interesting too, isn't it? Because when it's here and we're aware of it, so strong, right? So strong. Changes the way we think, changes our emotions, changes our body. And other times it's not so apparent. And so I was remembering the last time we did a thorough kind of working through the precepts. Nancy and I co-led a class some years ago. And I forget if we're taking turns or what, but we got to this precept on sex, and it wasn't kind of really up for me. It wasn't, really, I guess, really up for Nancy. And we just kind of said, oh, well, you know, you all know about this one, not a big one. And, you know, you know, which is funny to say, but it has that quality too, doesn't it? It sort of slips under the radar in a certain way. And we can also forget that we are sexual beings and forget about the power of that energy. Which is maybe why it surprises us with such ferocity at times when it emerges, because we've forgotten. Robert Aiken's chapter on this precept, and so that we're, as a Sangha, trying to read or reread this book, Mind of Clover, which is just re-impressing me anew, talks given by Robert Aiken, American Zen teacher in the 1970s. But his chapter on sex is probably his weakest chapter. And you can see if you agree with me or not, if you read it or are going to read it. He seems to have been not terribly in touch with the power and the depth of sexuality when he gave that talk. And one of the things he mentions is that the treasure trove of knowledge in the Zen tradition is in the stories. So we have, you know, all kinds of teachings and sutras and so on, but the treasure trove is in the stories, the Zen koan stories. So he mentions in there that he had a big index of koans, and he could only find one that had anything at all to do with sexuality. So he's lamenting, you know, that the Zen school just you know, is ignorant, you know, the ignorance of the Zen school on this topic. They hadn't tried to work with it. And so I'll read you that story and then mention a few others, because now we have the good fortune in our time and place that many of the stories that were lost or hidden, they weren't available to Robert Aiken in the 1970s, even though he could read Japanese and had access to all the texts that were available. We have more stories about women and surrounding women. And so sexuality can be reintroduced and explored as a spiritual question, as a practice question, as a very important question. So here's a story that Robert Aiken did mention. And this, as well as the other two I'm going to mention, are in the forthcoming book, The Hidden Transmission of the Lamp, edited by a few colleagues of ours in the Bay Area. An old woman in China supported a monk for many years. She built him a hermitage and provided him with food and clothing. After 20 years, she wondered what he had attained and resolved to test him. She summoned a beautiful girl from the village and sent her to the hermit with instructions to embrace him and ask him how he felt. The girl did that, went in, caressed the monk, and asked, "How do you feel just now?" The monk said, "A withered tree on a cold boulder has no warmth in winter." The girl returned to the old woman and told her what had happened. "What?" the old woman said. "To think I've been supporting that imposter for all these years." She grabbed a stick, hurried to the hermitage, beat the monk, shouted, "Get out of here," and burned the hermitage to the ground. So it would seem the understanding of the old woman was not that it's about denial of our feelings, of our human feelings, including sexual feelings. So a mistake to repress or deny, even if you're a celibate monk. Here's another story. And that last story, we don't know when in China that was supposed to have taken place, but this one is supposed to have taken place in China in the 12th century. It's called Miao Zong's Dharma Interview. Before Miao Zong became a nun, she used to visit Master Dawei's monastery and study with him. And he gave her a room in the abbot's quarters. I guess she was traveling from a ways away, you know, had to spend the night. I was just telling somebody you can spend the night here in the Dharma Hall, so we carry on that tradition. So the abbot gave her a room, you know, in his area, in his suite. The senior monk, Wanan, did not approve of this, you know, scandalous behavior. So Dahui, the teacher, said to him, "Although she's a woman, she has outstanding merits." Wanan, the head monk, still disapproved. So Dahui urged him to have an interview with Miao Zong, the nun, or nun-to-be, I guess, she was not yet ordained. And Wanan reluctantly agreed and requested an interview. So Miao Zong said, "Do you want a Dharma interview or a worldly interview? Do you want a Dharma interview or a worldly interview?" "A Dharma interview," said Wanan. "You know, I want the whole thing." So Miao Zong said, "Then please send your attendants away." She went into the room first, and after a few moments she called out, "Please come in." When Wanan, the head monk, entered, he saw Miao Zong lying naked on her back on the bed. He pointed at her genitals, saying, "What is this place?" Miao Zong replied, "All the Buddhas of the three worlds, the six patriarchs, and all great monks everywhere came out of this place." Wanan asked, "May I enter?" Miao Zong replied, "Horses may cross, asses may not." Wanon was unable to reply. Miaozong declared, "I have met you, senior monk. This interview is over." She turned her back to him. Wanon left ashamed. Later, Dahui, the teacher, said to Wanon, "The old dragon has some wisdom, doesn't she?" And I want to just tell you a little bit about the commentary. So these are a collection of 100 stories, Zen stories, featuring and about and honoring women. And then there are commentaries from 100 women Dharma teachers, contemporary women Dharma teachers. So this is going to be a fantastic book when it comes out. And Tal has discussed some stories from this in his classes. We have like a pre-release version. Yeah. We're really excited. So this is the commentary on this case in the book is by Chris Fortin. I don't know if you've ever met Chris Fortin. She's one of Norman, one of the priests in the Bay Area Everyday Zen group, ordained by Norman. Wonderful person. And I heard her talk about this before, and she describes it in here, that she hosts an annual women's retreat. You might think about going one year, if you're a woman. And these stories were starting to come out, and so in the women's retreat, they decided to act out the story. They decided to act out the story. "We performed a skit," here's her, Chris's words, "we performed a skit of this koan on the opening evening of the retreat. I volunteered to be Miaozong. I wore a flesh-colored full-body stocking, and I was deeply moved and jolted by the experience of entering into Miaozong's skin and enacting her fearlessness and compassionate activity. Here was direct body-to-body, heart-to-heart transmission across time and space from a full-blooded woman who had no shame about her body and who was a deeply realized practitioner to me, a woman practitioner more than 1,000 years later." So there's something about these stories that can transmit something. I have another story. I'll put the other story on the website when I have time tonight. So, sex, of course, is very personal, very private, very emotional. You know. And each of us has our own journey through adolescence. Being the father of a pre-adolescent kid, we're really wondering about this right now at our house. How can we take our place, you know, fully take our place as adults with this possibility of deeply touching another, you know, fully touching another human being? And whether we happen to be opposite gender or the same gender, doesn't matter. The body longs to be touched. And two bodies can become like one body, creating life in many dimensions, and so easily it goes astray, right? So easily this power to give life and create wholeness and connection can create divisiveness and hurt, and people can spend a lifetime recovering from that hurt, or maybe more than one lifetime. So I don't know if I am in a position to give anybody any advice about this. I get as confused as anybody. But sometimes, right? Sometimes we're in alignment with these powerful energies in the body, in the mind, and in the heart. And, you know, nothing could be better. And maybe that's why we're sitting zazen. To see if we can feel our way into that kind of alignment and that kind of harmony that we can bring forward to our friendships, to our relationships that somehow, you know, through some strange circumstances, the situation is right that we can have loving physical contact. And like the old monk, we can't shy away from it either. It's here. It's a part of our humanity. It's our responsibility to find out how to hold it wisely so that we can create life. Maybe I'll close with Allen Ginsberg. And then that'll be enough. And I really look forward to a conversation with as many of you who have time next Wednesday at 6 about all this. We can reflect on it, read. I'll try to get the stuff on the website, and I hope have a very honest and intimate conversation next week about this. Song. The weight of the world is love. Under the burden of solitude, under the burden of dissatisfaction, the weight we carry is love. Who can deny? In dreams, it touches the body. In thought, constructs a miracle. In imagination, anguishes till born in human. Looks out of the heart, burning with purity, for the burden of life is love. But we carry the weight wearily, and so must rest in the arms of love at last, must rest in the arms of love. No rest without love, no sleep without dreams of love. Be mad or chill, obsessed with angels or machines, the final wish is love. Cannot be bitter, cannot deny, cannot withhold if denied. The weight is too heavy. Must give for no return, as thought is given in solitude, in all the excellence of its excess, the warm bodies shine together in the darkness. The hand moves to the center of the flesh. The skin trembles in happiness, and the soul comes joyful to the eye. Yes, yes, that's what I wanted. I always wanted to return to the body where I was born.